Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvin Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvin Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. One of the most damaging decisions that the government has made over the last few years, in my opinion, has been Common Core. That's taking a fairly not that good educational system, taking the national embarrassment that is our current public school system, and making it exponentially worse. But the problems with Common Core don't just stop at the educational issues. We've talked a lot about those on the show, talked about how Common Core's methods themselves are flawed, but there's actually even more to the story, and we're going to discuss that with my first guest, Jason France. Jason France is a former Louisiana Department of Education data analyst who testified at the 2014 legislative sessions to expose the state's illegal sharing of student Social Security numbers, and also sharing private data with other third parties. Right now he's running for the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. Now, that's a state-level school board seat, one of eight people in the state who have maximum influence on the public school decision-making. To learn more about him, you can go to jasonfrance4la.com. Jason, welcome to the show.
No, thank you.
Now, let's start a little bit at the beginning. I mean, let's back up and say, you know, explain to me how you got involved in all this. Like, you're working as a data analyst, and then what happens next?
Well, yeah, I was working at the Louisiana Department of Education for almost 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
The last person that came in was John White, who used to be leading the Recovery School District in New Orleans, which basically is a state-level school district that they're trying to replace all the local school districts with. So he comes into the department, and I start seeing a lot of different things that he's pushing that are very bad for, you know, school systems, for local control, for the state. There's a number of things that are untrue, like reports, information that we were producing for the public, for transparency reasons, that they were masking and lying about and misleading the public on.
So let me just back up onto that one
my
for
blog
a
and,
hmm? Oh, let me interject for a second. So just to make sure that I'm getting this, you're saying that they were putting information out there to show how transparent they were, but the information was false.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So they stopped communicating stopped us from being allowed to communicate with anybody. And they hired a whole big staff of PR folks to spin data and to make things look wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they would only allow these certain folks to communicate with either school districts or media or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the reports that they were producing and the data they were producing, the claims they were making were false. I know this because I was in charge of most of the data.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that maybe, you know, to me that was, you have a duty to the public. You're working for the public on taxpayers. You have a duty to the public to be honest with them, to help and support them, and not to deceive them.
can you give an example of just, you know, or just a general idea of what type of misrepresentation was going on?
Like graduate counts. Like, they were lying about that and saying, oh, look, our dropout counts are going down, our graduate counts are going up. A lot of that was based on fraud and misrepresentation. You know,
so
they
were
excluding certain students.
Okay, because, you know, a lot of times in data analysis, we say, like, you know, there's some things that are so difficult to quantify, like, you know, student satisfaction or something like that. But we're not talking about these hard-to-quantify things. We're talking about, you know,
straight-up
hard data, easily measurable and false.
Yeah, and they refused. Like, it takes lawsuits to get anything out of them for years. I worked with one group to try to get some information out of them to try to disprove some of their claims. It took years, like about 4 years, basically,
wow,
to show that in the Recovery School District, the charter schools were actually pushing out 15% or more of their students. These are the state-run or approved charters. They're pushing. They were having them classified as transfers out of state or country. And that means that they're not dropouts and they're not grads. And so that's a more complicated one that makes the denominator go down, but it makes it look like all these schools and all these measures and things that they're doing are great and wonderful and everything is improving.
It
was based on allowing folks to lie. Actually, the Recovery School District, there's an article recently that I worked with somebody from New York on. He interviewed some of the data coordinators, and they were actually told to code folks this way so things would look better. And
wow.
Nobody, you know. So that's just one example. There's lots of other ones. They've hidden how they've lowered the threshold or how many points you need on tests. They've lowered steadily. So that it looks like kids are doing better when actually we're actually doing worse.
I want to interject something
like that
over here. Here's something. I mean, I used to work, but you know, before I started my own educational company and before I got in politics, I used to work as an actuary at an insurance company.
Okay.
And I mean, the level of scrutiny that we as a private sector received from the government was extremely high. It wasn't just a question of what the, I mean, of course the data had to be accurate. There was no question about that. But they would sometimes argue about like that a particular statistical method, not for describing the existing data, but for predicting future data. They would say this particular method of predicting future data, we don't like it enough. Not that I dislike it, they just don't like it enough. And so they would have us, you know, either refuse to let us work, or, you know, there's a lot of kind of stuff. And this is on not data, but on predictions. They didn't like, they disagreed with our view of the future, right? And that's how, what they're doing for the private sector. Now, over here, for themselves, look at the lack of scrutiny.
There's no audits. There's nobody in charge of it but themselves. They actually get to decide what their own scores are. They have their own school district. Mm-hmm. And they produce the scores for that district. You know, they wouldn't allow like teachers to evaluate themselves. They wouldn't allow other school districts to allow them to you know, classify themselves or see how they're doing. But they do that for themselves. They do that for all their data, and nobody else outside of the department audits it. In fact, they got rid of their audit department, their internal audit department.
Wow!
And, that's how crazy and irresponsible they are.
And that doesn't happen in the. I mean that. But not to say that private sector companies can't lie. I mean, anybody can lie, but when a private company...
But then you go bankrupt and stuff, eventually, you know, or you get caught and you find... But that's not what happens here at this state agency, because there's political motivations to lie. They're being told or encouraged to lie because that helps political fortunes.
And
that's one of the reasons that it's gotten way out of control and needs to be scaled back or shut down, I think.
And I you know, I 100% agree. I mean, it's... You know, people say, like, you know, without the government, how would we have free education? And that, I mean, that's something that's just straight. There's no way to even respond to that. We already have free education. I mean, we have Khan Academy. I mean, we have MIT OpenCourseWare. I mean, that's for, you know, as advanced as you want to get. You have Coursera. If you want to get so advanced and so abstract and deal with really interesting and weird things, I mean, they're... Like, free education is a reality in the private sector already. Whatever, like, let's say that we at one point needed the government for free education, which I disagree with, but let's say we want at one point needed it. That need has been met. You know what I mean?
That need what?
That need has been met. I mean, the private sector has provided free education. Here it is. I mean, you can go right now.
I mean, we're moving a lot closer in that direction, but I don't know that that's the truth for all families. But I think that's attainable in the future, for sure, for everybody. Right now, what we have is an expansion of the government sector trying to promote a lot of different choices or ideas and things. But basically, it's a way for them to control education. The Common Core, that's a way for them to have federal control and dictates over education. No Child Left Behind was actually designed not to help children from falling behind, but to have federal control over all education systems by 2014. You had to have everybody at 100% proficiency in every school and every subgroup, including kids that just walked off across Mexico and came into your school district. They had to be performing at skill level on English. Mm-hmm. You know, it was designed to fail. The federal government is trying to get in there to make schools fail so they have more control over them.
And that's
just been the trend, I think, for a while.
Now, what's been extremely interesting to me is to see how, you know, Common Core has finally created something of a backlash. And we're seeing more and more people, mm-hmm. you know, opting for things like homeschooling, more and more people saying, listen, let's just get this government regulation has just, like, stopped making any sense. I mean, Common Core mm-hmm. is such a bad curriculum. You know, anybody, you don't have to be a math expert to see what's wrong with Common Core. It's you know, you yeah. look and you're like, why? I mean,
can't do first and second grade or some work. I mean, come on now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the stuff is wrong. I have a first grader and a third grader, by the way, so I've been dealing with it for some years.
And you've seen, I mean, you as a math guy yourself yeah. know that what makes a method efficient in math is if it has fewer steps, not if it has like 2,000 steps to do a simple problem. And yeah. so, you know, we have this going all over the place, and we're so close. We can say, like, you know, let's just say uh-huh. that instead of having to use your tax money for something ridiculous, you could just take your tax money and use it for whatever you want. I mean, there's a private sector in education that's just waiting to, you know, economically explode and create jobs and all that, but also to provide the mm-hmm. kind of education that people actually want. I mean, kind of like right. what the public school system right now is like, you have to pay into it. So it's kind of like they, out of your budget that you would have used for education, it's like they took all of it. And then, yeah. you know, it's kind of like an arm.
What you got.
A type of situation. Let's talk a little bit more about that right after this break. Right now we're talking okay. to Jason France. He's running for the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, Louisiana. And Jason, your website is jasonfrance4la.com, right?
Correct.
And that's the number for us. Jason France, number 4, LA.com. Now, you've seen the work that Jason's doing, exposing, you know, whistleblowing, lawsuits, running for office. And that's like a lot for one person to be doing. Now, imagine that all of us didn't do all three of those things, but just did one of those things, one or two of those things, got involved in a small way. I mean, imagine what we could do with all that. Now, if you want to do that, you got to get to lp.org/states. That's where you go to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state and get involved with libertarian activism as well in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788.
That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Right now, we're talking with Jason France. He's running for the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education in Louisiana. Jason, let's talk a little bit about some of the next steps. What are the first things that those who are interested either in, you know, freedom as a principle, as a concept, or those who just want better education for their own kids, right, for their friends' kids, for total strangers, they just want better education. What are some of the first steps we should be thinking about right now?
Not worrying about the federal government telling us what that looks like, I would say. And trying to work with our local communities. I've been really impressed with the homeschooling movement that we have in Louisiana. I had no idea until a few years ago how robust it was and how dedicated a lot of these parent teachers are. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that they can do, but you definitely need to stop the state and the federal government from getting involved in the systems that we do have.
I want to add something to that. You know, there's two myths that I really feel are important to address. One myth is that if you do homeschooling, your kids will be academically behind. Now, I work in education. I work with students because we do stuff online. I work with students from the most famous academies in the country and in the world. You know, schools like Exeter and all that. I work with students from public schools, private schools, parochial schools, and homeschools and homeschool and homeschool.
Right.
It's just everyone knows that the homeschool kids are 2 or 3 years ahead. There's just no parents.
I was surprised. I was in that camp too. And what you hear is it's sort of like you hear the anecdotal case of the parents that use homeschooling as a way to get out of having their kid educated or sending them to school, and they just keep them in a basement locked up or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what I found is these are some of the most dedicated, nurturing parents that we have that participate in this. And the other thing is, like, they're going to be social pariahs or not have any social skills. But I've been seeing some things where they have apps. Parents have, like, apps on their phone where they can find homeschool groups and activities and things that they go to, and they do that on a regular basis. So I've been pretty impressed with what's going on in that arena.
One of the things
I don't want the state and Fed to get involved with that, and I think that's where they're heading.
Yeah, and that's really important. Like, we need to just say, like, just there should be no state or no federal influence whatsoever on homeschooling. I think that should be an absolute hard line in the sand. In fact, we should be getting any state and federal restrictions, in my opinion, out of all private schooling of any kind.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense for them to have any business there. If a private school is not good, people can leave. But I want to talk about, when I was a kid, we had these ideas that, like, homeschool kids were weird because they talked differently from the way they were weird. The thing is, it's true. They acted differently. They spoke differently. Uh-huh. They presented themselves because they acted like
adults. They were more adult.
Yeah. They acted like adults. You know, when I talk to a homeschool kid now, it's just like talking to an adult. When I talk to a non-homeschool kid, it's like talking to a kind of like mongoloid, monosyllabic, like only knows how to use profanity, like half human, half ape. But to other half humans.
Well, my kids are in public school, so they're not quite like that. Although sometimes, like, they can be mistaken that way.
So what I'm saying is there this mythology that somehow a public school or private school is necessary for, you know, social, I mean, there's just no truth to that.
Yeah.
And so I think that the idea of getting, of encouraging the government to stay the hell out of homeschooling, and where it is involved in homeschooling, like here in Maryland, telling them to get out of homeschooling, I think that's exactly right. Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, like, radical anarchist crazies like Ronald Reagan have worked to shut down the Federal Department of Education. You know, Reagan tried to do that. So many people have made it clear that they think that's necessary. Do you think do you agree, I guess?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think the reason we had it is because of civil rights movement where we had, it was formed more to make sure that, that African Americans had had access to schools, mm-hmm. schooling, because I think there, so I think there is a case to be made for that, but I believe we've moved beyond that. And it's, what's happened is like a lot of times with government, you find different new reasons to exist, and you expand your power, and you grow, and you grow. And, you know, after a while, it's then just feeding itself. It's just finding reasons to exist and making problems so it can solve them. So, I mean, seriously. So I would scale it back quite a bit. Maybe if there was a way we could reduce taxes nationally and then let states and local governments keep those taxes rather than having the feds give us our own tax money back for our schools, that would be nice.
With about 10,000 strings attached.
Yeah, that's what's going on. And it's like, this is our money. Why are you doing this? I mean, we know why they're doing it, but I mean, it's just not right. That would be where I would hope that we would at least turn the tide, is to eliminate that department and eliminate that funding requirement from states and local folks, and allow, that are taken from the states, and allow the states and local governments to determine how much they want to spend or how they want to apportion it or not spend on that and those types of things.
Now, there's
federal government needs to, it needs to go away.
And that's absolutely true. You know, one of the things that we've seen is that in the private sector, there are, we have free things like Khan Academy, but one mm-hmm. of the big questions that a lot of people have is you could do something like Khan Academy, but how do you prove your skills? How do you show anybody that you can do anything?
And that's some of the issues you have, because they can't. I don't know that they can provide degrees or diplomas. You can use the resources and learn it, but
to learn stuff, but you can't.
I think some. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you'll probably have to have some sort of certification tests or mm-hmm. some sort of panel of where you demonstrate your skills in maybe trade organizations or other types of things. Maybe some sort of, I don't know. I mean, I think there are ways that you could do it. We just don't have any of them developed yet, but that would be something we need to work on.
And that's exactly where I thought. And that, because I started doing research on I was going to write an article, and it's going to be called "The Future of Education," right? And the base focus was going to be the future of education, where I was going to talk about that there were going to be these certification tests for different areas. Mm-hmm. Where you can learn however you like. If you like to learn on the computer, cool. You want to learn with in a traditional school, cool. You want to learn in a monastery, you learn in a monastery, and then you demonstrate this ability. I theorized predicting the future with mm-hmm. these type of certification tests. And when I started doing research,
I realized why you couldn't.
Yeah, but here's what I realized: I wasn't predicting the future; I was predicting the present.
But it needs to be more developed and matured, and it has to be accepted by industries and stuff and businesses.
Thing, especially in math, and I'm a math guy, so obviously I'm going to mm-hmm. talk a little bit more about math. Especially in math, you have multiple different ways to demonstrate math proficiency. I mean, the most difficult is obviously that I know of is the actuarial exams, but it's not mm-hmm. the only one. And what we're seeing, talking to people in industry, talking to people in consulting companies, investment banks, we're seeing that more and more of them are saying, if I see one kid that has a bachelor's degree in whatever, and somebody else that's passed this very difficult test, realistically, I'm going to probably take the very difficult test more seriously, because it's a universal mm-hmm. standard, and it's a fairly steep hurdle. Days, before we run out of time, what other advice would you give to either libertarian activists or just to those who are interested in education to start to break free of this?
Well, it's been a long journey trying to run a campaign, I have to say. We need folks that are experienced in that learn all that, I've had to do just about all the jobs that there are, from fundraising to meeting folks to writing about things to filing reports and everything, and you just got to do it and see how far you can go. Mm-hmm. And then even if you don't successful, maybe you can help somebody else be successful down the road. We need more experienced folks in that area. As for education, the best thing I can say is talk to your neighbors and friends, talk to your representatives, talk to the elected officials that are supposed to represent you, because then you know whether they're in your corner or whether they're against you. And if they're against you, you need to remove them. You need to, mm-hmm. I mean, they're there to represent you regardless of whether they agree with you or not. That's, mm-hmm. you know, and if they're not going to help you, if they're not going to listen, then you need to, whether you run for office or you just, you know, tell other people about it or work or go testify in front of the legislature, in front of Bessie, or your local school board, you need to get involved. And the more people that get involved, the easier it is for everyone else to get involved and make a difference.
Now, I want to ask you one, and this is one of those things where it might be difficult to quantify, but, you know, I've seen some of the press that you've gotten. I've seen, you know, mm-hmm. some of the play, you know, I haven't been specifically there, but I've, you know, heard reports of some of the plays that you've spoken at. Now, mm-hmm. if you were going to purchase an advertising equivalent to the amount of publicity that you've gotten for the cause of liberty, ballpark, mm-hmm. how much do you think that would have been to buy that much advertising for the cause of liberty?
For in terms of all the things that where people have covered
yeah,
my,
of all
my
the
stuff
publicity
and everything
that you've been able to bring to the cause of liberty by running for office. If you just been hey, I don't want to run for office, I'm just going to buy an ad. How much do you think that kind of advertising would have cost?
$50,000-$100,000 maybe, in all the different papers and things.
And I would say at least that. I mean, if you were going to buy just that much ad space, it would have been at least that. But it's not just ad space.
And I'm not done. This is toward the finale. Like, there's going to be a lot more coming up right now because we're at the home stretch.
Yeah. And so that's an important thing.
I have like three or four forums and stuff. And all sorts of other things coming up. But yeah, I mean, it brings these issues out. So whether you win or lose, that's a good point. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think, well, if I'm not going to win, I'm not going to run. If you run and you get your issues out there and you make your case known, maybe you don't win, but maybe you make it a lot more difficult for the bad people to continue doing the bad things. You mm-hmm. make, because you got people onto them.
And you bring attention and advertising and focus to these libertarian ideas, and that's really how we grow the movement. Anyway, Jason, I want to thank you so mm-hmm. much for taking the time to be on the show with me today and to share your insights on liberty and on education.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
Guys, if you want to learn more about Jason France, you got to go to jasonfrance4la.com. Now, you've seen the kind of work that Jason's doing. He's, by his conservative estimates, somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 worth of free publicity. And it's going to be increasing because, as everyone knows, the closer you get to elections, the more coverage the election gets. So that's something that you could bring. Now, I know that there are some folks who are listening to the show that can easily donate $200,000 to the cause of liberty, but most of you can't. I can't. But what I can do and what I will be doing in 2016 is I can run for office and you can run for office and bring more and more attention to the cause of liberty and get the ball rolling away from big government and towards liberty. Now, if you're ready to do that, you got to get to lp.org/states. And get involved in a libertarian convention, a libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Like many of you, last week, I watched the second Republican debate. And I was so just disgusted by what I saw that I just stopped halfway through. And then, because of my role as vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee, I took a break, drank some water, and I just watched the rest of it later on YouTube. And I saw a lot of things, but here's the thing that I didn't see. I didn't see anybody talking about cutting government. I saw a lot of people describing problems with government and then finding bigger government solutions to the big government problems. One of the most popular points, and one of the strangest points that I've ever seen this from anybody, is this Berlin Wall that a lot of Republicans have decided they want to build between the United States and Mexico. Now, here's a fact. Let me put it like this. If I cover myself in sugar and mosquito attractant and five kinds of honey, and then I go outside and get attacked by mosquitoes, the solution to that is not to build a 40-foot wall around myself because mosquitoes can't fly above 40 feet or something. The solution to that is to not cover myself with mosquito attractants in the first place. In almost any circumstance, there's a big government non-solution and a cut government solution to the problem. So let's look at how libertarians would handle the, quote, problem of immigration. First, we would recognize that there's economically beneficial immigration and economically non-beneficial immigration. You know, a lot of you guys have those Bose headsets or Bose speakers in your house. Here's a fact. Bose, which creates all those jobs, which creates all that technology, which helps the economy move, it's a company started by an immigrant. You know, so many of you guys buy stuff from IKEA. But here's the fact. The founder of IKEA didn't become a U.S. citizen. And that, to me, is a loss. You know, that's something that we can use right over here. So first, we recognize there are people whose immigration is useful economically. You know, personally, immigration of any kind can be useful to that person, their families, whatever. But in an economic sense, there's types of immigration that are extremely beneficial. And the first thing that we need to do as a country is to work to attract more of that kind of immigration. When you see the co-founder of Facebook cutting up his U.S. citizenship because the taxes in the United States are too high, that should send you a message. That should send you the message that we are pushing away the very people who would bring the most to our country, pushing away the people that have brought the most to our country. So the first thing I would say is if you want to have good immigration, if you want to have the kind of economically useful immigration that creates jobs, that creates employment, that creates good products, that improves the economy, that improves our daily day-to-day lives, the first thing you need to do is make America the most attractive place on earth for those who want to produce goods and services and jobs. And the first way you do that is by ending the income tax. We just need to cut government spending to 1992 levels to totally get rid of the income tax. Gone. It's done. It's a thing of the past. Now, in 1992, we still had roads. We still had internet. I mean, we had a lot of things. And we just need to bring it to that level to have no more income tax and the corresponding many more jobs, many more producers, the great innovators from all over the world will want to come here because this will be the place that is the most conducive to their small businesses that will grow to medium businesses that will grow into large businesses. So that's the first step. You want to attract the kind of immigration that has made America great, you need to get rid of the income tax. You need to get rid of these unnecessary regulations on small businesses. Because the truth is, while there are some entrepreneurs who start out with a huge amount of money, a lot of people just start out with a great idea and a lot of passion behind it. You know, I've had the opportunity to meet small business owners from all over the country. And what I see is not just people who had parents who were multimillionaires. I see people who have great ideas and so much passion and so much energy who are willing to do whatever it takes to make their business succeed. And too often, what they have to do is just go through silly regulatory hurdles. I myself am a small business owner, and there are areas in which I just don't go because of the nuisance of regulation. And the result is that many people cannot have access to my services that otherwise could have. And there's so many small businesses with such great services that only a few people can access because the government prevents other people from accessing those. So the first step to good immigration, lower taxes, less regulation on all people, but especially on small businesses that are going to grow into the medium businesses, that will grow into the large businesses. But let's talk about the other side. Let's talk about people who come to America and exploit America, who've never paid a dime into Social Security and yet receive Social Security, who don't pay any taxes and yet receive all kinds of government services. Now, one thing that we could do is you know, create a 40-foot wall and then make it so that no one could, quote, go over it. Although I'll tell you this, you make a 40-foot wall, someone else is going to make a 41-foot ladder. And if you make a 300-foot wall, someone's going to make a 301-foot ladder. I mean, that's not a really intelligent solution. We can spend billions of dollars manning this gigantic wall with soldiers and snipers and sharpshooters and all that kind of stuff. We can make the border between America and Mexico the same as the border between East and West Berlin was when I was growing up. We can do that, but it's going to be expensive. It's going to be ineffective. It's going to be tyrannical. It's going to, at some point, probably be used in the other direction. It's hard to build a one-sided wall. The wall that can keep somebody else out can also keep you in. And at some point, if American taxes become so high that more people are trying to escape through Mexico, it's that wall that will allow the American federal government to raise taxes. But let's say instead of having this expensive wall that would benefit, I don't know, the concrete lobby and the wall lobby, and of course the U.S. military would be happy to have more, you know, an entire gigantic border to deploy troops across. Instead of that, what if we did something a little more intelligent? What if instead of doing that, we just got rid of all the reasons that somebody would come here in the first place who didn't want to work? What if we made a real simple rule that says there are no more free government services for anybody? You see, I don't really care if your parents, your great-grandparents came over here on the Mayflower. That doesn't mean that I owe you 2 years of unemployment. It doesn't mean I owe you, you know, a 4-year, quote, education where you explore some kind of hobby. It doesn't mean any of that. All it means is that you, like everyone else, have the right to pursue happiness, but not to steal it from somebody else. So what if we did that? What if we made that our first step, just started having fewer and fewer government services until America had the fewest government services of any country on earth, until there was no reason to come to America unless you were here to work? there would be no reason to come to America except for because of its opportunities. Not for its guarantees, but for its opportunities. What if we did that? Well, then the only people that would run across any border or swim across a border or fly across a border would be those who wanted to contribute to the economy through work, through entrepreneurship, through labor, through capital, through whatever means. Now, where do we start that? Well, it's not that hard. The first step is to shut down every single social welfare program, especially and including Medicaid, especially and including TANF welfare, especially and including anything else that would attract somebody for the wrong reasons, or take somebody who was motivated but then comes to America and looks at a choice between difficult regulations on one side and easy welfare on the other side and is transformed by a backward system from a hard worker to a leech. Now, if you want to do that, if you want to help work for that, you can make that happen. It doesn't require us to spend more money as a nation. In fact, it requires us to spend a lot less money as a nation. And that's more money that you can keep for yourself to use for whatever charities you think deserve it. You can use that money that you keep for whatever education you think is the most effective. You can use that money, that's your money, to buy whatever health care you think will work for you. But if you want to make that happen, it's not going to happen all by itself. It doesn't happen because, you know, there's someone like me talking on a podcast or someone else is talking on a TV show or someone else is making a speech. That's not what's going to make it happen. It happens when we run for office. There is nothing that you can do that's going to have more of an impact on the cause of liberty than running for office as a libertarian. You heard Jason Francis saying that he conservatively estimated that up till now, before election season even starts, he's probably gotten about $50,000 to $100,000 worth of free media coverage. And he's running for school board. I mean, you run for Congress, you run for state legislature, you get even more coverage, even higher profile coverage. And if you want to do that, if you want to help transform America and to make it what it can be, if you want to work to make sure that we have laws that attract economically beneficial immigration instead of requiring people to turn into economic drains, well, then you need to go to lp.org/states, get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
The schizophrenia community faces tough challenges every day. The community includes individuals living with schizophrenia, their partners, parents, children, siblings, friends, neighbors, co-workers, and also their providers of healthcare and social services. To hear Dr. Gordon Atherley introduce members of the schizophrenia community who are sharing their experiences, tune in to Schizophrenia Community Radio every week, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson, in The Sea Around Us, said, "All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. I want to read you guys a quote from Jeb Bush, and it's a quote which, on principle, there is a principle under here that I think is important. Here's the quote. He's talking about a person that was working as a legal clerk or something like that who didn't want to file a marriage certificate for gay marriage. Now, as I've said many times in the show, I don't think anyone should need any kind of a certificate to get married. Government approval is not required. That's between you, the person or persons that you're getting married to, and whatever religion that you may choose to follow. George and Martha Washington didn't have a marriage license, but that doesn't mean that they had an illegitimate marriage or a non-marriage. Government, in my opinion, has no place in marriage. But I want to read you this quote. Here's what he says, and he's talking about the decision to sort of require this the person to file this, you know, against her will or whatever. He says, "I was opposed to the decision, but you can't just say, well, they, which are gays, can't get married now. But this woman, Kim Davis, there should be some accommodation for her conscience." So what he's saying is that there should be some way to allow this person to have some accommodation for her conscience. Her conscience is telling her that she shouldn't have to do this, or that she should not do this. And he's saying there should be some accommodation for her conscience. And the general idea of accommodation for conscience is an extremely central idea. Now, I, and many of you, I also have a conscience. My conscience tells me to, above and beyond, not kill. I'm a strong believer in nonviolence, and I believe that nonviolence, at its most basic level, involves not killing. And even when somebody attacks you, I believe that it's not right to kill that person. But I think that almost everyone on earth believes that if someone doesn't attack you, if someone's an innocent bystander, you shouldn't kill them. Your tool should not be used to kill them. Your labor should not be used to kill them. Your money should not be used to kill them. I think that it is morally, ethically, and absolutely wrong to force somebody to support the killing of innocents when they do not support the killing of innocents. I don't think there's any justification right now for the fact that many believers in nonviolence, many believers in at least just not nonviolence against innocent women and children, should be forced to use their money, to have their money taken away to attack and bomb and obliterate other countries. That is a deep question of conscience. That is as deep a question of conscience as any religious question, is as deep a question of conscience as gay marriage is for many people of various religions. It's a very deep and fundamental question of human conscience. Now, there are many other issues of human conscience out there right now. I don't think that it is morally right that when somebody comes over here from Mexico who wants to start a business, who wants to do something to share his talents with his fellow man, wants to do something that's going to create jobs and services and products and opportunities, I don't think it's right that he's given a choice between an impossible amount of regulation that he couldn't hope to understand or social welfare. I don't think that's right at all. Many of you listening to this show, you grew up in America. You know the American political system. You're fluent in English. You would have trouble understanding, let alone following, all the regulations that are put on small businesses. And when we criminalize those who want to work but don't want to just deal with nonsense, or just maybe don't have the ability to deal with nonsense, they might be great at all kinds of other skills, have all kinds of other skills, but not a skill of dealing with kind of regulatory foolishness. I think it's morally wrong to say that that person can't come in. And the fact that my money is being used to force that person into a welfare situation, this soul-crushing welfare situation, instead of allowing him to work, that's morally wrong. And when I say that we need to have these accommodations for conscience, I think that begins at a very simple place: eliminating the income tax. I don't think that anyone should be forced to pay into or to financially support actions that they find morally repugnant. We don't need to be creating enemies all over the world. And I don't think we need to be forcing those of us who believe in nonviolence to create enemies all over the world. I don't believe in violence, and I don't really want more enemies. And so as a matter of conscience, as a way to allow people to do the right thing, I believe our first and fundamental step must be to roll government spending back to 1992 levels and to completely eliminate the income tax. And yeah, that's going to come with a huge reduction in military spending, and that's kind of the point. If somebody wants to voluntarily pay for military overreach to act as the policeman of the world, you know, I have no problem with that. You know, I will try to talk them out of it. I will disagree with them. I will tell them that they should do anything but that. But I'm not going to use force to stop them. And at the same time, I don't believe that anyone has the right to use force to force me to financially support what I find morally repugnant, or to force you to financially support what you find morally repugnant. So much of the focus has been on things like gay marriage and Planned Parenthood. And you know what? I actually agree. I don't think that any person should be forced to fund Planned Parenthood if they morally disagree with it. But I think that those who say that abortion is murder, there's an argument to be had. But I think that everyone on earth will agree that murder is murder. That bombing people in foreign countries with no good reason is murder. That bombing innocent civilians is murder. And the fact that we are all being forced to support that is, in my view, absolutely, absolutely unconscionable. In life, we have matters of expediency. And every day we deal with them. We run our businesses. We go to work. You know, we compare which store has the best cost price on blueberries or gasoline or whatever. And those are important things. But I believe even deeper than that, even more important than that, are the questions of conscience. Now, right now, if you are robbed, I don't believe that necessarily that means that you have committed a moral crime by being robbed. But if there's something that you can do to prevent someone from doing something evil, to prevent someone from taking your money and your work and using those resources to destroy lives, to destroy civilizations in other countries, if you have the option to put a stop to that, I believe that each of us has a moral imperative to do so. And the way I interpret that moral imperative for me, and the way I think that many of you will also interpret that moral imperative, is not just to talk about it and think about it. It is to run for office as a libertarian and say, first and foremost, that if you're elected, you're going to cut military spending by 60%. The second that I'm able to, I'm going to register for 2016 to run for Congress in Maryland. And as soon as that Libertarian Party puts out that pledge, I'm going to sign it as soon as it's out there. I'm going to sign that pledge to say that if I'm elected, I'm going to shut down all these foreign operations, shut down the foreign military bases, and cut military spending by 60%. And if you're ready to make that contribution to the cause of liberty, you need to get to lp.org/states and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state or start a libertarian campaign in your state as you decide to run for office yourself. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.